Hello, everyone. This is Frank Shines with Let In But Left Out, and I'm joined today
with Grandison Shines here in Arizona.
Grandison. We got clear in a million skies out here. It was cold yesterday. Wind chill factor was in the 30s, probably. I think it was less than that, probably here.
No way. Wow.
So how's the weather out there? How's the
we have similar weather, and here yesterday, what? 80 degrees.
Get out of here. 80 degrees.
80
right
degrees
now?
Yesterday. No, yesterday it was 80 degrees, but I thought you said it was cold yesterday, but it's a little cold, chilly this morning, not nearly 30 degrees, but we have clear skies, sun is out doing its thing, shining on everything, and the heat is coming in.
Is that right? Well, that's good.
It is. Supposed to be pretty hot.
I guess that is a good segue to our topic for the day. It sounds like, you know, the system is rigged. You guys get good weather. We got bad weather. So, this is an area that we touch on in the book quite a bit. And obviously it's top of mind for a lot of individuals, particularly given the pandemic, but even prior to the pandemic, right? A lot of people felt that the system's rigged. We talk about it from three different perspectives. You know, when you heard comments from, you know, some of the top elected officials moving into the presidential election, right? Obviously, yeah. Trump. Individuals that thought of things from that perspective. Bernie Sanders was saying the same thing. The system is rigged, you know, from the perspective of, you know, the middle class, you know, is fading away, and the working class is not being protected. Donald Trump, from the perspective of, you know, we haven't put America first. You know, the system's rigged against the little guy. So we heard that refrain come up quite a bit throughout the election. And even Biden, who ultimately got the nod, you know, is talking about the importance of getting back to helping the middle class, helping the working class people, giving people a fair shake, making it possible for laborers to rebalance versus their loss of power that's you know, happened over the last couple of generations. And so, a lot of questions around, is the system rigged? So Grannis and I, we're gonna kind of dive into that question today. But before we do, we're gonna talk about some of the items in the news. So let me turn it over to you to kick us off on that. Grannison, what have you heard about this whole thing about Cuomo and Cruz? A couple of scandals this week.
Oh my goodness. Leaders continue to do some crazy things from my standpoint. In the face of whatever issue, situation, tragedy is going on, talking about Ted Cruz here first, the wrong thing to do is to leave the situation. I don't care how you think you feel. I don't care what the family says. In his case, the family, he should have been staunch enough to say, you know what, we have to stay here and make sure that we at least have a presence. They're escaping the presence. They have the financial means to do so. It is really a slap in the face of those people who don't have the financial means to do so, and or people who do, but their pipes are bursting and everything else. When I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, here we go again. And some of the things he said in the past came back to bite him, that he tweeted about some other people doing the same thing.
Right.
I just feel in the face of adversity, leaders should be right there, front line. If you're not front line, you're going to, don't leave. Just don't. It looks so bad. It looks horrible.
Yeah, exactly. So in the height of this this freeze, Texas freeze, freeze out, people living there, losing lives, up to, you know, more than 21, 22 people dead based on the latest information. And he gets right on, you know, gets on a plane and heads down to sunny Mexico with his family. And then he, you know, tries to lie about it in so many different ways. And the worst part, blaming his children, right? My daughters, my children wanted me to, you know, take them. They wanted to get out in a warm time. So trying to be a good dad, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, first of all, I'm certain this was not driven by his children, right?
No, we know that. Don't try to rub that in our faces like we're not intelligent here.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, to your point, number one lesson, you know, number one rule of leadership is take care of your people, right?
Care of your people.
It's a is the number one thing you should be doing is trying to do everything you possibly can to serve your people. You know, you should not, in the face of a crisis, your job as a leader is not to run away.
Not to run away.
And help the people.
Yeah, exactly. Some things should be common sense, and or even if it's not common sense, I'm sure he's heard of that particular thought process being a leader. At least I'm sure he's been in the position long enough to where he knows. And that was just a very big rub in the face for other folks who are going through this very cold spell and just have the tragedy going on, like you said. So,
right.
Come on. Man.
Right. So Cuomo, a nursing home scandal. So he's been kind of called to the carpet on decisions he made regarding, regarding the data associated with the number of people who were dying during the the height of the COVID crisis in New York. New York, you know, at that point, you know, still I believe has the highest numbers of overall deaths. And consequently, you know, it got a lot of attention. There were a lot of good things he did in terms of his daily updates on television with the PowerPoint slide and say they're going to follow the data. But then, you know, these latest revelations show that he did not reveal the data. And they're, you know, now it's under investigation. His side of the story is that the data was reported in terms of a priority, you know, to the DOJ, but wasn't reported as, you know, in a timely manner. And he apologizes for that, you know, to the, at the state level. And, but it just brings up all sorts of questions. So what have you heard? Has that been your take on?
Yeah, exactly. Even with the numbers reported, some states, the deaths count, I think they reported that about 8,500 or so, it was actually doubled.
Yeah, double that. Yeah. From 8,000 to 16,000.
Wow. That's crazy. And we've heard about not only this, in this capacity, small, when I say smaller capacity, I mean at a very much so more dialed in demographic of the homes, the residential homes, but also we've heard that other states and some other people have reported numbers, even some other countries have not reported numbers that were accurate. And of course, people are trying to maybe tie it into something financial, I don't know, but they're trying to make some things look better than they are, perhaps. And he got caught up. In fact, I think somebody said that he has like self-destructive behavior or something like that. And this is just one of those that he chimed in on. That was kind of funny when I read that.
Right.
Self-destructive behavior. Seemed like he was doing pretty good. Seemed like he was giving some information, especially when he had the mandate. And he was demonstrating at the time how people should stay home and work out and everything else. And all that looks great in front of the camera. Then behind the scenes, of course, here we have this scandal that the FBI is now investigating.
Yeah, exactly. The other big scandal is not against Cuomo or against Cruz, an individual, but against an entire state and perhaps leaders of the state, the governor and others. But this is the great Texas freeze. So used to live in Houston, lived in Austin as well. And this is tragic, right? Because where I got my, you know, I cut my teeth in the consulting technology fields.
Exactly.
Young in Houston, Texas, after I left Westinghouse, where I was working, Westinghouse Industrial Motors out in Austin, Texas. And obviously the reason why Ernst & Young was in Houston is because that's where the money is, all the oil and gas, the whole energy industry. So I spent, you know, 4 years, 4.5, 5 years in that industry, between the work I did from the petrochemical side of business with Westinghouse and then another 4 years with Ernst & Young in the industry. And this has been a big deal. So here we are, a state, right, that has probably, you know, has the largest resources in terms of energy in the country.
Yeah.
And it's freezing to death because it can't get heating for its people. So some of the latest information, right? So here are the pictures of these three children, three siblings died tragically in Texas deep freeze. Yahoo News says it didn't have to be that way. Channel 13 in Houston, freezing to death, suspected hypothermia deaths in Holmes Mountain, Texas. Another where 11-year-old boy dies in freezing mobile home as Texas deaths mount.
Right.
And last data I had at the time that we were pulling the information together said over 22 people. Latest data we're looking at is $18 billion in damages, 69 deaths as of 19 hours ago.
Wow.
So these numbers are just continuing to grow. This obviously is tragic. Let me just tell you kind of my take on this and get your thoughts. So one of the things I do remember, we always used to talk about two things in the energy industry, right? Storage and transmission.
Right.
And that is to say, and it doesn't matter what type it is, right? I work MidCon Natural Gas. I work on the Alyeska pipeline up in Alaska, with British Petroleum, with Exxon, with Shell, a company called Cal Resources, which is a spinoff of Shell down in Southern California, all the wells, the oil wells there. So it's always been about storage and transmission, right? So one is if you've got natural gas pipeline, one is you store that and have it ready in terms for reserves in case something ever happens. Because once it freezes, right, they have these things they call a pig that runs through the pipe and they try to monitor if pig is actually, they call it a pig because it's kind of it's a device that has a bunch of sensors and things on it and it runs up and down the different pipelines and things. And it checks for data, checks for cracks and other types of defects that might be in the pipe. It checks to find out their potential freezing issues, all of that type of stuff. So when your pipe freezes, then you're not going to get the transmission. And it doesn't matter if that's, you know, crude oil or if it's natural gas. If you have not stored that somewhere where you can tap into it in an emergency, you're going to have problems. And then second, you know, is transmission.
Right.
Same type of thing. And for all the different types of energy, again, doesn't matter if it's crude or if it's natural gas or if it's, you know, solar or wind, transmission means that you got to be able to move it around. So the problem that Texas finds itself in is they're on a completely different, their own separate grid. And so once you're on your own separate grid, it means anytime you want to get transmission of energy somewhere else, when your system goes down, you can't do it because you're not connected to anyone else. You're on an island. So now you can't get any transmission of any energy from any of the other states, right? They are on their own separate, all the other states, many of the other states are connected on multiple grids, gives them backup redundancy in terms of transmission. Mm-hmm. Then second, in terms of storage, well, it doesn't matter whether or not you've got, you know, renewable energy resources. Everybody knows when it comes to renewable energy resources such as solar and wind, the batteries have not evolved to the point where you can have the equivalent type of storage that you can get from crude and from natural gas. So most organizations, most countries, even companies that have, you know, multiple energy sources have always thought from the perspective of make sure you've got plenty of storage in crude and natural gas in case anything goes down with the wind or you can't get solar. And therefore, you never depend on your renewable energy resources for your storage. Primarily, you depend on those for transmission. And as the batteries get better and better, you'll be able to store solar and wind energy, but you don't depend on that. So that's a well-known thing. So, you know, some of this crap out there about, you know, this is what happens when you decide to go with renewable energy is it's completely untrue. It misses all the basic concepts of physics and your business model. Every organization, every country, every state should think from those perspectives. Transmission and storage. Transmission, right, you can get any time if everything's fine with wind and solar, but you know that wind and solar can't store yet because the batteries have not evolved to that point. And so you always have your backup in terms of your traditional energy sources. but they shut down, right? They put themselves in a situation where they can't transmit because they're on their own grid. They put themselves in a situation where they didn't have any backup storage because of their business model, saving costs. And now when an emergency like this strikes, you're stuck. And that, from my perspective, is, you know, kind of the underlying, you know, physics of what happened from a poor political business model and leadership perspective in the state. But tell me your thoughts on this.
Sure. Yeah, let me formulate a question on that. One of the big opportunities I heard that was missed as well was the opportunity to, and I believe this fits in somewhere where you were talking about, especially in the storing area or even before you store the energy, was the winterizing of the actual, say for instance, the power plant. Does it take that power? Of course, that power can be stored somewhere, right? It needs to be stored somewhere.
Yes.
They were talking about some of the other crude oil aspects as well. It wasn't winterized. And I heard that there were some back and forth between the state and the government, Texas government. I mean, excuse me, the state and the actual power plant, the actual company, going back and forth saying, hey, we don't want to subsidize it, basically what Texas was saying. And they were looking for them to do that. So where does that come into play with where you're talking about? That's obviously before the storing piece, and how is that a critical component of what you're talking about as well in storing?
Yeah. I mean, that's a part of your business model decision, right? So in terms of, you know, how much, when it comes to thinking about reliability, you've got to, there's always a trade-off, right? How reliable do you think your system is? And, you know,
right.
So yeah, you would winterize with an expectation that, you know, every so many days in a year, we're likely to have something go wrong. So therefore, you have this backup plan that ties into how much are you going to winterize, how much are you going to have additional storage somewhere to kind of offset that, right? So you may, you know, if you may go back and look at historical data in Texas and say, okay, given the history, here's what we typically see. And then, you know, usually from an engineering perspective, you're going to give yourself, you know, some sort of, you know, factor, service factor. Right. So maybe you multiply by two or three times that number. So if on average you have three major storms that that hit the country, that hit the state, then maybe you're going to plan on, say, the worst case of nine. So if it's nine, then I figure, okay, if it's nine, then let's say on average I'm going to be down for, you know, it takes me two or three days to get everything back up and running, which means that in any given year, I need to take my nine, multiply it by three. I need to have 27 days of backup storage and or winterizing of some sort to kind of offset that to give me the reliability. They did not invest in that. They made it. That was a business model decision. That's a right. leadership decision, okay. yeah. not to invest.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's, from my perspective, that's the way, you know, kind of how that ties into things.
Now they're definitely starting to feel those effects. It is unfortunate. But I believe there are some leadership decisions that could have been made and preempted this whole incident to have it this bad, especially
right.
people having power out up to 4 million people at one time, quickly got it down to 300 something thousand, but that's still a good number of people that does not have power to basically do all their needs, as far as their basic needs.
Right, yeah. So how about the... How about this this issue with Robinhood, the shift gears, Robinhood GameStop, the congressional hearing headed up by Maxine Waters, Representative Maxine Waters. Did you have a chance to watch any of that or hear much about that?
I didn't have an opportunity to watch it. I wanted to watch some more information on it, but I was just kind of working this weekend. But I did hear some things about it here that Robinhood, first of all, I didn't know as much as I found out when reading an article about one. Well, let me back a little bit.
Yeah.
One, all these congressional, there's been a lot more congressional hearings, I would say, within the last 8 years or so, more so than any other time that I have even noticed. Maybe because since being younger, there's a lot more, I'm way more interested in political opportunities and right. finding out about them. But at the same time, it seems like there's a lot more congressional hearings. And here we have this gentleman here what's his name? Tenev, right? Yeah, Tenev, something like, no, what's his name? Tenev, something Tenev. I forgot the Jonah's name. Vlad. Yeah, Vlad Tenev. And so just hearing about this, I didn't understand as much as how the software, that's what I was trying to find out, how his software, how they're holding him responsible or accountable for that piece of it. And now he's talking about they made some mistakes in the past, but this was a generation from the, I'm drawing a blank here, remind me the people, something Rabbit, right, that started it pretty much on Reddit. But however, I didn't find as much info or had enough time to read as much info as I wanted to on it, but I want to definitely see the congressional hearing. That's for sure.
Yeah, so the SEC, right? So she brought in all the players, she brought in the SEC and others. And, you know, most would say that, you know, this is just political theater more than anything else, you know, chance to kind of,
that's what it seems like,
you know, stick it to the, you know, the big hedge fund folks that sure may have gotten into this and made out big, and how they screwed over the little guy. You know, it's kind of the David versus Goliath story is kind of what was one theme running through this. Another theme running through it all has been, we now have things like Reddit and Robinhood that begin to level the playing field for the little guy. Mm-hmm. And let's not have, you know, Congress, let's not have lawyers jump into the game and start, and our political leaders jump into the game and not allow average retailers to both have the opportunity to make money as well as, you know, quite frankly, to be exposed to the risk associated with making that money. And let's just, you know, a lot of conversation around, this is a good learning opportunity for the nation to understand how a lot of these things work. But it's also a great opportunity for us to ensure that, you know, platforms such as Robinhood that make it possible for an average, you know, millennial and average
to
invest in the stock market can do so. But there's always the risk that they get involved in a bunch of trading or margin, buying on margin, those types of things, and put themselves at risk. But that's part of the game as well. So let's educate, let's give people the opportunity, but let's not shut this thing down.
Yeah.
And then I guess the third strain is around, you know, is there something that's uniquely different now and valid for us to think about from an SEC regulating perspective, where it balances both of those two extremes, right? It doesn't put people at risk, but it also, you know, allows people to go in and be able to trade stock and allow them to take personal accountability, but also does some things, whether it's with education or with an understanding that something is uniquely different that we need to maybe refine some of the rules around this to ensure that, you know, we don't put the whole system at risk as well as individuals unduly at risk. So right, those are kind of the strains running through this from the perspective of, you know, Reddit and everything. Their role was really from a social media perspective, allow people to gather together and mobilize. And then the mechanism through which they did it was Robinhood, the online trading platform.
Sure.
And then, so it was, those are some of the key players. SEC, believe it was the head of the SEC or someone related to the SEC that was also there to provide feedback. And I think at the end of the day, the common, you know, message was that this was a good lesson for America. And it's a right good thing for all of us to be aware of, but that, you know, we probably didn't, it probably doesn't, lend itself to the degree that there's, you know, widespread fraud and investigation required and everything, but there are probably some things that they need to kind of shore up and tweak.
Well, I do understand they were, I hear that too. I do understand they were asking, I believe it was AOC who was asking at some point about whether the trades are actually free or not. For me, it's like, what does that have to do with anything from my perspective?
Right.
Well, I'm serious. Like, what does it have to do with anything? They allow people to download the app to have this trading platform, and they go in and they trade. They do what they are going to do. And then she's asking also about whether or not they have, whether or not the stockholders now, the shareholders, have come out ahead, or are they in the decline? And he's like, how is he really supposed to know that? Why are they asking these types of questions? Is he, I understand that's his app, and I believe sometimes there's a over-exaggerated expectation to know some things. I understand about the free portion, but the relevance of what happened to me, that was not in sync. And then the whole aspect of whether or not those who traded with the app, are they ahead or are they behind in terms of how that it was. So that's why when you talk about political theater, that's where to me it seems like, yeah, it's a little bit more political theater.
Yeah, exactly. No, I you know, I mean, this whole belief, you know, kind of the liberal lattes that you know, we're here to protect you from yourself, right? Listen, right. You know, we're grown adults, right?
Exactly.
Yes, there should we should ensure people have access and the ability to get access to information so they can make wise choices. But at the end of the day, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's on you, right? You have to take personal responsibility at some point. You can't be there to be mommy and daddy for the whole country all the time.
That's exactly my point. Yes, well said.
Yeah. Okay, last topic is Clubhouse, something that we'll continue to talk about. This is something that we suggest everybody just kind of go out there and take a look. It's an audio chat social media app. It's still in pre-launch, so you have to get invited by invitation only, but they'll be going live. I'm not sure the exact date, but right now they reached 8 million downloads just in the past 8 weeks. So it's getting a lot of attention. Keep an eye on this. I think it's something that is I think it's here to stay. If it doesn't suffer the same mistakes of previous social media and allow itself to become kind of, you know, a platform for vitriol and hate, I think there's a great opportunity for them to create the equivalent of kind of a 21st century interactive radio platform is the way I would say it. Almost like it's like an interactive podcast, right? As opposed to just a podcast where Grandison and I talk and then someone listens at the end of the day. It would be something more like having Zoom on audio where anyone can interact and we have a conversation.
Okay.
Now the question is it going to be facilitated and managed in the right way where we don't get the loudest extreme voices, or is it going to be done in a way that we get that nice balance and richness of conversation, which I think is the reason why you're seeing companies like Clubhouse and you're seeing the big podcast trend. I think the previous media companies have been so focused on advertising, whether on traditional media, cable, TV, regular television, or any of the social media platforms, or a lot of some of the news out there. You don't have a rich, in-depth conversation around these complex topics. And you can't fix complex topics like transmission and data and you know, storage of energy in Texas with a soundbite, right? You can't fix problems with coronavirus with just a soundbite. You can't fix problems with, you know, Robin Hood and GameStop, you know, with someone coming on a congressional hearings and they got 5 minutes, you know, to make their point and kind of grandstand. That's, I think, what's driven a lot of the hatred and vitriol and a lot of the polarization in the country and an item that we talk about, you know, in the book. So Clubhouse could be a platform that allows much more in-depth conversations across, you know, the whole spectrum from the far left, the far right, and everything in between. Any of your thoughts on Clubhouse before we jump into the topic of the day, Grandison?
Interesting in hearing how that's going to pan out. When you were talking about it, because I haven't heard much about it, you informed me earlier, I was thinking about it from a Zoom standpoint, but just with the audio. And you confirmed that. So let's see how that transpires. See how that does in the marketplace.
Yeah, right. Okay, the topic for the day. Grandison, I was watching this new movie on Netflix called I Care a Lot. And it's, you know, the writer, director of Jay Blakeson. But in the opening of, you know, the opening scene, you're seeing this this, I guess it's, you know, we used to call it old folks home, right? Elderly patients, and there's at the center of this is this character, this young lady, who basically she can, through a connection of doctors, have doctors say that, you know, certain types of people, rich, elderly people, that they can pawn off or show are suffering dementia, can't make wise choices for themselves, she mm-hmm. gets guardianship. And with that guardianship, she gets control of their money, their estate and everything. And that's her game, right? That's the game wow. she plays. Mm-hmm. Now, and so as part of that game, you know, it reminds me of, you know, some of the themes that we've seen, you know, recently, you know, whether it's the movie Ozark, Nails, about the, you know, the nail salon place, the Breaking Bad. It's like these stories of people who normally, you know, would just be average Joe, average Jane, but then see that the system or feel that the system is rigged right. and believe they have no other choice than to pursue these other avenues to make money, whether in drugs or with a scam like this. So the quote that, you know, really struck me at the beginning of the book was, at the beginning of the movie is, playing fair is a joke invented by rich people to keep the rest of us poor, right? So what's your thoughts on whether or not the system is rigged?
We hear so many ideals, conspiracy theories as well about the system being rigged, and everyone tries to have their own proof element. Some of them go, I think, will go down the rabbit hole, and I believe some of them have some validity, whether or not we're going to fully research and go down that rabbit hole mm-hmm. is a whole different story. But yeah, there are times when it does seem like the system is rigged, and there are times when it's rigged to the side of more the rich and or those who have the financial resources. As we see, we are supposed to have here, for instance, in Arizona, we have this whole clean election opportunity, right? You're supposed to be able to not get an exorbitant amount of money for your political campaign. Everyone's supposed to contribute, and maybe I don't understand this enough, but the way I was explaining, everyone's supposed to be able to contribute $5, some low number. But yeah, then you have people who will contribute X amount of dollars. There's obviously some workaround in the system, which means to me, of course, yeah, the system is rigged. So now you have someone who has a friend or a partner, somebody that has deep pockets, and they can come in, give them a very large lump sum of money. This is just one example, a very large sum of money, and now they have the opportunity to out-campaign their competitors when it's supposed to be, quote, finger quote, clean elections.
Right.
So for me, yeah, the system is rigged in some areas. You can definitely tell. I feel that as we continue to move forward into the economy, as the separation and divide gets bigger, you're going to see more opportunities, because more people are going to feel the system rigged and see more opportunities for con games, per se. Right. Like that. That's my thought. What do you think?
Yeah, so I agreed. I mean, you know, in the book, I'm going to hit on a few, you know, stats that we talk about in the book, and get right back to, you know, the kind of the, you know, real life examples. And we got Vladimir is going to be joining us, that we're going to be going into this whole discussion around this new AI tool. And this is a perfect example of the tee up of this. And that is to say that, you know, when technology changes and advances as rapid as it has, when globalization happens, and then we have, you know, that exacerbated by a pandemic, there will be a lot of winners and losers, right? We talk about, you know, mm-hmm. in April 2020, unemployment rate rose to 14.7%, and nearly 40 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits at the top of the pandemic. That number is still 10 million Americans out of work. Data that shows 3 million women who are out of the workforce completely. And that we've probably gone back 35 years in terms of the impact that's going to have on the women, the workforce of women in the labor market, right? And then, you know, some of the other data points that we touched on, right? Millennials have become the lost generation. who entered the labor force during the Great Recession of 2008 and now face a once-in-a-century 2020 coronavirus pandemic, right? Asian Americans, we talked about this last week in terms of what was happening with Asian Americans. The SAT scores are no longer being allowed, right? Because many Asian Americans were outperforming their Anglo counterparts, right? But Asian Americans describe the gut punch of racist attacks during the pandemic. We talk about, you know, all the comments made around the coronavirus period, being the China flu and even worse comments that were being made. Increasing wealth and income inequality, the work that we saw with economist Raj Chetty, who's showing that those who are the essential type workers, they're still suffering, you know, recession, whereas the other elites, top 20% people who can work from home with Zoom, they pretty much bounced back and recovered. And many of the millionaires and billionaires have literally seen about the equivalent of $3 trillion of wealth transferred from the general population, to those groups. And we, you know, give a number of different examples and stats around, you know, the whole issue with the big tech companies, right? So the big tech firms have dominated. The big retailers have dominated during the coronavirus. A lot of the mom and pop shops are really suffering. The only way to get seed funding is to start up and innovate in the market does not compete with the top tech firms, right? That's a specific quote from the book. And so, yeah, there are a number of examples that show that, yeah, the system is rigged in some respects. But on the other hand, you know, I think all of us have, you know, come to understand once you know the game, then you got to play the game, right? That was the thing I was taught coming right out of high school for my coach, right? Whether going into the military or going into business, learn how the game is played and play the game. Despite those challenges, I still think there are just enormous amounts of opportunity. And we're going to be talking here with Vladimir, and perhaps we'll be able to have Vladimir on one of our next podcasts to go into more information around the AI technology and how we can leverage some of those things. But in the book, we talk about how the system is set up and ways to play the game, new skills to look for, the right people to surround yourself with, sessions like this, where perhaps you can listen to podcasts or other experts to understand where the trends are going and take your talents and skills in a way that help you intercept those trends and ride the wave to success. That's the way to not get, you know, used by the system, but instead use the system yourself. So with that said, Granison, I'll let you go ahead and make any closing remarks. Vladimir, you're more than happy to make any comment, but otherwise we'll get ready to shut down and we're gonna be on some conversations here with Vladimir that we'll share with you guys in the future around some new technology that we're looking at to pull data, handwritten information, and other from forms using artificial intelligence. Granison.
Yeah, the only thing I wanna say is pay attention to the system. There will be some changes as we continue to go on. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I believe that there are some ways that we can, quote, like you said, Frank, play the game, work our way into the system, through the system, so that we can benefit and ultimately help other people that we'd like to help as well. Right. So we can leverage the system that way. Let me use that word, leverage the system in order to do some greater good. Hey, by the way, let's go and do it.
Excellent. Well, this has been Frank Shines and Granison Shines with Let In But Left Out. Thanks, everyone. And again, we hopefully will be having Vladimir join us on another session and we'll pick his brain on some of the latest things in technology. You guys have a great day. See you next week.
Okay.
Hey, Vladimir, I'm going to shut this down and restart. So give us just 1 second. You may have to rejoin.
Okay.
Okay.